Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I have a wonderful host. I'm the host. I have a wonderful guest with me tonight. His name is Wilson Hickman. He is a director of movies and all sorts of fun stuff, so we're going to talk about him. But first of all, let me tell you about him, okay? So tonight we're sitting down with the visionary mind behind The Lost Healer, a groundbreaking faith-based fantasy film that's quickly gaining attention, and it has. For its blend of spiritual depth and cinematic ambition. Wilson Hickman isn't just a director, though. He's also the writer, editor, cinematographer, and the driving force behind a unique project. Wilson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, James. How are you?
All right. I hope that was okay, you know, because I just, found that on, gathered that together. So hopefully everything was right there.
Well, thanks. One clarification I do want to make. I was cinematographer in terms of like making the shot list and deciding the angles, but we had excellent camera ops who did most of the actual filming. So I want to give them due credit because a lot of the shots in the episode were shots I had not planned. The camera ops just got creative and said, hey, what if we filmed it also from this angle? And I ended up saying, hey, that's better than what I wanted. And so final episode, but
nice. I really wanted to talk to you today about music and the whole visionary behind this. I think it's going to be a television series. Is what you told me.
Correct. Yeah. This is the proof of concept episode, which is now in its film festival rounds.
Right. Yeah. And I did see you won a lot of awards for the. For the concept, you know, which is great.
Yes, seven award nominations and one award win, which we're very grateful for at ICFF.
First let's go back. Okay, so I found that you have a Bachelor of Science in Film Production, right? So explain to me, because I'm not sure what a Bachelor of Science in Film Production is. Could you kind of tell us what it is, you know, so I would understand better.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's basically a degree in film production where you do a lot of hands-on training with cinematography, editing, some color grading, pretty much everything that has to do with actually making a film. That being said, I will say that for any aspiring filmmakers out there, a degree in film production is not necessarily going to give you all the skill sets that you'll need in the field. You want to keep your learning versatile and multifaceted. So I learned a lot from YouTube, from Udemy courses, as well as continued contact with one of my film professors, who I'm very grateful for. So it's very great to really get a variety of experiences, and really hands-on experience is the best way to learn.
Yeah. And how many years did you go to college for this? Is it two or 3 years? You know.
Yeah, it was a little over 3 years for me, but I didn't take as many classes per semester as you could have, so it doesn't need to be that long.
Okay. Yeah. Now I talked about editing the videos, you know, because I got one thing for you to talk to you about too.
Sure.
I found out that you do it through, you edit your videos through Adobe Premiere Pro. Is that what I'm reading here?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you also edit your videos through Final Cut.
I do have experience in Final Cut, but I tend to do my editing only in Premiere Pro. And then I'll do color graded in DaVinci Resolve.
Color, okay, all right. So, yeah, Final Cut for me, okay, so I have a Macintosh. I just love Macintosh, everything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I never really got to experiment with Adobe Premiere Pro, but I'm okay at Final Cut, you know. So what is it about Adobe Premiere Pro that you like more than Final Cut, if there is such, you know, such a, you know, fan base?
I don't know that I can. I don't know that I can necessarily say I chose Adobe because I prefer it. That's simply what they used in my college, and so I was trained on that. And so now, just through sheer force of habit, it's my preferred software.
But nice. Yeah.
I'm hoping to one day branch over into DaVinci Resolve to do editing there as well. But as of right now, I only use it for color grading.
Yeah, I understand that the sentimental value of the class uses that, so I use it too. You know, because I took web design classes, you know, with Dreamweaver, and I just used that for forever. I couldn't use any other program, you know, so I understand the need for. I was taught on the program. I wanted to do it always on the program, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, okay. So I read that you are a certified drone pilot.
That's correct. Yes.
Right. And I did see. I watched your. I guess we could call it like a trailer, like a concept trailer.
The episode. Yeah.
Proof of concept episode. Yes. And I saw. I think like two or three shots from the drone's perspective. You know.
Yes.
It fits beautifully in it. You know.
Thank you.
Certified drone pilot. Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. It's funny because I'd gotten my drone license a few years back when I still lived in Arizona, and I did some drone flying just for fun. Didn't actually have any, because at the time I was doing freelance film work, and I never had a client who required drone footage. It was just something I did because I wanted to add it to my skill list. And when it came around to renew my drone license 2 years after that, that was in 2023, and thought to myself, well, I didn't use it for work before. I'm probably not going to use it for work now. It might not be worth renewing. But then it's much easier to renew it than to get it the first time. You just go online and take this test. And so I thought, well, you never know. I might get an opportunity to do it in the near future, and then I'll be sorry I didn't renew it. So I renewed it, and turns out that was God giving me that nudge, because literally less than a year later, the opportunity opened up to make this fantasy proof of concept for The Lost Healer, and we used the drone in it. And I was able to fly that with a up-to-date certification, because I had followed what I at the time thought was just a hunch, but ended up being God's urging and saying, hey, you're going to need this skill. So that was just one of many little things that I can see looking back of God guiding the process.
Yeah. It's a unique view, which I love the way you shot the footage with the drone. Thanks. Very rarely do we see any shots like that. So I just want to give you a big thank you for allowing us to see what other types of footage we could get with, you know.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite shots, I think my favorite shot actually in the episode with the drone, is the very first shot. So the opening shot of the episode is a drone. We start up in the sky with all the trees slowly lowering through the trees. Then you see this shadowy cloaked figure in the distance. And that was always in my head when I thought of the story, like pretty much instantly when I was writing this episode, I knew that this opening scene was going to be captured with this long drone angle. And the intention behind that shot, and I love the way that the music that our composer did lent to that scene, but the idea for this first shot was capturing just the beauty of nature, the immensity and the beauty of God's creation, but also kind of giving us a sense of, wow, we're descending into this shadowy and mysterious world, and there's a lot of adventure that can take place here. And just this hooded figure in the distance we don't know anything about yet. I wanted to immediately start the film off with visual intrigue.
Right. Yeah. So I am a big fan of that episode right now, and I was so mad that I couldn't see what happened after, you know, they surrounded
yourself. Like, yeah, that's been a common response.
Yeah, but you want that, you know, you want the fans to wonder what's happened next, you know.
Yes,
because at the end of the episode, I'm not spoiling for anybody, but it's very, very heart-wrenching, and like, oh my God, what happened next? I don't know, you know. So hopefully you can give us the next episode, you know, pretty soon, you know. instead of making us wait like a year or two.
Well, I'll tell you this, the episode is written, and anyone out here who hasn't seen the episode, you can watch it on thelosthealer.com, our website. And then if you have seen the episode and you, like James, want to see more, best way to help is to share the episode. We're on Facebook, Instagram, or just share our YouTube channel. We're currently in the middle of a marketing push with the film festival circuit. The episode is still making its way through festival rounds, but our prayerful hope is to find an executive producer to help us raise funds for season one, which is mostly written. So if it's any consolation to those of you waiting on the cliffhanger ending, episode two and beyond are written.
I'm also going to leave the link below in the description of this podcast and the YouTube channel, and make sure it gets all the way out. Yeah. I had something to say, but I lost it, but I'll find it back again. Okay. So I'm 45. It's hard, you know. Don't grow older than what you are now. Stay at your level, you know. Speaking of which, you're pretty young, correct?
I'm older than you might think. I'm actually just turned 28.
That's not old, according to me. I'm 45, so you're still a young dude. But you've had other movies you've directed and were in, like you were in Rocky Mountain Student. Hold on just a minute. You were in Murphy.
And okay, then, yeah, I was the film editor for Murphy. I wasn't in the film. Yeah. Okay, I try to avoid going in front of camera if I can help it.
Why not, dude? I just
don't prefer acting. Like I'm happy to do, you know, podcast interviews like this, but I just don't like acting.
Okay. So you're more like a behind the scenes guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. So, but you did write, directed, and edited the bus station.
Yes. Yeah. That was the first film I made that went into film festivals, and that was actually, I was still in college.
Yeah.
And that and was it came out
in 2019.
Yes.
And I see you got a lot of awards for that one too.
Yes. That was a huge blessing. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend those festivals because that was right when COVID hit. So it's been amazing with The Lost Healer going to International Christian Film Music Festival, where we just won Best TV Series. That was the first festival I've gotten to attend in person, even though I've had a film that went to festivals before. So that was a huge pleasure.
Yeah, COVID messed everything up, man. During the middle of COVID, I'm like, what am I going to do? So I started this podcast, you know. But it hurt a lot of people, but it really helped a lot of people find their own niche of you know what to do in struggling times. Yeah. So. So you said you are because I looked this up. You wrote you were a novelist before moving behind the camera.
That's correct. Ever since I can remember, as a kid, I would write my own stories. This is how my passion for creativity really got it started, was writing books. Yeah. And when I say writing, I literally mean I would take a pencil and write books, because I didn't know how to type yet when I was like 7 or 8 years old. And that graduated pretty quickly to typing once I learned how to. And then my writing just took off. So as a teenager, I wrote some animal, like talking animal detective stories based on my actual dog. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And self-published a few of those. Then as I got older, I started writing longer fantasy novels that kind of served as a prelude for The Lost Healer. I didn't write The Lost Healer as a book, but I did write a series of fantasy books that I haven't yet published, but that in my imagination take place in the same universe. And so if those books ever do get published, you'll hear lines of dialogue or major character names in the fantasy books, and you'll say, wait a minute, I recognize that from The Lost Healers, because they're meant to take place in the same world.
Okay.
but then that really opened my heart to the love of fantasy, because I'd always been a fan of reading fantasy books like C.S. Lewis's Narnia. I enjoyed the Narnia films. I enjoyed the Lord of the Rings films. And I think fantasy, more than most genres, has a unique ability to amplify the struggle between good and evil, and to expand our imaginations to be large enough to take into account real life spiritual warfare. So fantasy, despite giving us escapism and taking us out of the real world, it paradoxically also gives a deeper exploration of the real world struggle between good and evil. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. Nice. So going from novelist to directing, How did that storytelling background shape the visual language of, you know, The Lost Theater?
Well, that's a very good question. I could go a lot of ways with that. I will say that the difference between writing books and scripts, one of the most obvious differences is in a book, you can tell the internal thoughts of the character. You can have paragraphs of paragraphs where nothing actually happens in the external plot world, but mm-hmm. there's just thoughts going on in the character's mind. There's all these internal monologues that are giving you deeper exposition into their character development. And you can't have that in a film, or if you do, you have to get very creative with it, because we can't just sit there forever listening to the character think in a movie. That would very quickly get tedious to watch.
Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman, that's the best overtalk. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, you can do it. It just has to be creatively executed.
Right.
So there's that difference. But the interesting thing that I found is that when I graduated to writing screenplays, perhaps because I always would listen to books out loud as a kid, and when you're hearing a book out loud, you can't help but imagine it. You can't help but imagine it visually. And so I think I've always kind of subconsciously associated the visual medium of storytelling, even with books. And when it came to writing my own screenplays, you may have noticed in the Lost Healer, or even if you go back and watch The Bus Station, some of my other projects, they aren't very dialogue heavy. And right. There's a reason for that. I prefer showing things rather than having dialogue spell out every detail for us. And I love films that do that. WALL-E is my favorite Pixar film, for example. There's very little dialogue in that film. It's mostly dependent on visuals. And I just love the power of picture and music to tell a story. And I think one of the biggest things that made it easy to transition from writing books to writing and directing films, and in this case, a TV episode, is that telling a story with visual editing, it's really just like writing, except for instead of using words on a page, you're using images and sound that are moving.
Right.
And that's how one of my film professors put it. And I think he's absolutely right. That was a brilliant way to summarize it. I'm like, that's why I love film editing so much, because it's just like writing, except for using video and sound instead of words.
Yeah. 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 Because for me, watching The Lost Healer, I kind of got the feeling that you don't need words all the time, just like you said, beautifully put. And I'm not spoiling this for anybody, but anybody who watches the episode, you kind of wonder, what is she taking out of that tree that guy saw, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you're wondering what I'm talking about, go watch the episode, links below, you know? It's so great, y'all. I just can't get enough of that episode. What first sparked the idea for a faith-infused fantasy setting? So did any books or film pieces can I take a guess?
Go ahead.
All right. I love the movie Robin Hood, the one with Kevin Costner. Did that have anything to do with this project, or...?
I have to confess, I've never even seen that film, so I can safely say that probably didn't have anything to do with it.
but go watch it, because it has like medieval themes. I mean, it's just, you know, reminiscent of The Lost Theater for sure. So I encourage you to watch it.
All right. Yeah. No, I'll have to look that up and watch that, because I love watching good films as much as I love writing them. If I had to say there was something that's... It's really a twofold answer, because... What sparked the idea for fantasy of all things is I grew up loving C.S. Lewis's Narnia. And I was like, okay, I love the fantasy genre. Right. I'd written fantasy novels. And I said, I love the genre of fantasy because of its ability to amplify the struggle between good and evil. And you can have spiritual parallels to the Christian journey that feel wondrous and properly majestic. Versus when you preach explicit Christianity in modern day dramas, it often comes across as ham-fisted, and it doesn't have the glorious weight that I feel it should. And fantasy gives you a much better way to do that, I think. So that was what sold me on the genre. But specifically the story, whenever I'm creating a story, I actually come up with the characters first most of the time. Yeah. And the reason for that is I want the characters to be fully rounded, believable, real people. I feel like that's missing in a lot of modern cinema. A lot of times in modern cinema, characters are just props or they're mouthpieces for some modern ideology, but they don't have believable human agency. So they'll get into situations, and because the screenwriter wants a certain outcome to take place, the character will make a decision that just feels off. Like, if there were a real person with the real background that I've been shown, they wouldn't have made that decision. But because the screenwriter wants this plot development to happen, they're going to do that thing. And I'm very careful to avoid that in my writing. I want the characters to feel like real people so that they can engage real people in the viewers. And so I came up with the idea of a brother and sister story because I'm very close with my sister in real life. There's a little bit of me in Prince Rian and his protective instincts for Princess Kiva. But basically, my idea was that there's a brother and sister. Their kingdom has been invaded, and they're living under this murderous tyrant who is feeding them a false ideology and keeping them under basically a false peace, requiring them to compromise what they know is right. Now, Prince Rian, the older brother, because both of his parents have died as a result of this this tyrant's actions, he believes that the only way he can protect his people and protect his sister is by going along with the tyrant's ideology, because even though he might not privately agree with it, he sees no other way and he wants to keep the peace for the sake of keeping his only family left alive. But Princess Kiva, who's kind of modeled after the faithful Christian who follows Christ even despite persecution, she still believes in something that her father died looking for, which is the healer. And this is a lost relic that's prophesied to bring peace to their kingdom and usher in their true king. And she still believes that can be found. And at the opening of the episode, which you were alluding to, she's finding a clue to its location. But the difficulty is she can't share what she's doing with anyone. Even though she's on this quest that could save their kingdom and bring deliverance, she wants to share it so badly with her brother, but her brother's just wrapped up in all this political manipulation. Yeah. And she's afraid that her brother wouldn't understand it and might even turn her in if she shares it with him. And that mirrors the struggle that I and a lot of Christians I know have faced with. Sometimes it's difficult to talk about Jesus with your siblings or your close friends and family members. Thankfully, I don't have that struggle. My sister is a believer, but a lot of times it's difficult to share Jesus with people who are your close friends and family because you're afraid of saying the wrong thing and actually driving them away. Yeah. And so the inspiration I had was, while she's struggling to reach her brother, but she's still living out her faith, she is unknowingly inspiring hope in others. And so there's a young enemy knight whose name is Aaron. We don't hear his name spoken aloud in the episode, but he watches Kiva's actions. He has chances to capture or kill her, but his conscience pricks him and he won't do it. And he just sees her boldly living her faith despite the threat of persecution. And it intrigues him. And it's basically meant to be a reflection of how, as we live for Christ uncompromisingly in a world that increasingly pressures us to compromise, other people are going to take notice and they're going to be inspired by our example, even if we don't know that we're directly influencing them. Yeah. And just like Kiva doesn't even know that Aaron is watching her, she never knows how close she comes to dying.
You're right. Right. I mean, it's a wonderful episode right now. And I'm, like I said, I'm so mad that you cut us off. I was like, son of a, you know, but then I can't wait for number two, you know? So like we said before, you wore several hats, like writer, director, editor, and like we said before, cinematographer here and there, you know. So which role of those mentioned challenged you the most, and why do you think that wasn't, as opposed to, you know, other roles?
That is a great question, because each role comes with its own unique challenges. When I was writing the script, you share it with trusted friends, you get feedback, and you shape the story. And sometimes you have to make little tweaks to fit a film schedule, but also stay true to the integrity of your story. So, but I got to say, writing is probably the most enjoyable part for me, because the idea is just, when it's done properly, the idea just takes wings. You feel like the characters come alive and you can barely write fast enough to keep up with what they're doing. And I still remember to this day writing the final scene. I'm not going to talk about it for this episode because it would spoil it. It would spoil it. But I remember to this day writing that scene. That was not how I was originally going to end the episode. But because I thought to myself, well, Aaron, the young knight, he would really do this thing. He would really steal the amulet. That's as much as I'm going to say. Right. And I was like, well, if he did that, then here's what would happen. And then I'm like, okay, I guess the episode is ending that way. So again, just an example of the character coming to life, and they decide the course of the story to a degree because they're behaving like real people and I'm just the conduit. Directing was was what I thought would challenge me the most, because I hadn't directed anything since I left Arizona. And so I was working with a team of actors that I've never worked with before. I was working mostly with a crew that I didn't know prior to this project, but everyone just brought their A game and was so fantastic to work with. I cannot praise the casting crew enough. They were fantastic. And they turned what I thought could be a challenging director role into just an absolute joy. And so I would say directing this project was probably the easiest project I've ever directed, just because everyone was so enthusiastic and consistently just brought their best efforts to the project. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, although I love editing and it's one of my favorite roles, I think the editing actually is what challenged me the most. Because it's, you get so much footage, inevitably some of it has to end up on the cutting room floor. And because like you might have three amazing angles of this one event, but that event only happens once, so we can only use one of those angles. We shared on our socials a while back of some of my favorite shots that got cut, and it's like there are different angles of the same event in the episode. And if you follow along our YouTube channel, we release behind the scenes videos. You might see an angle of the episode and you're like, wait a minute, I don't remember that from the episode. That's because it was one of my favorite angles that ended up on the cutting room floor. So I just snuck it into a behind the scenes video.
So that's
one challenge. The other challenge, I would say this time around, was I had never worked with a composer before. All my previous projects, I used stock music, which can be good if you're blessed enough to find tracks that really fit. But and you can do some creative editing tricks to make the song shorter or longer, make it fit your footage better, and you can use stems and that helps. But at the end of the day, it's never going to fit your project like a glove. Like some human with artistic intentionality wrote it for your project. And so I was blessed to work with Ben Devine, who was our composer for this. And I don't know if I mentioned this at the outset of the episode, but I have no musical talent whatsoever. Like I cannot write a song. I don't know music theory. I can't play an instrument, nothing of mine. So it was a bit interesting when I was having the writing session with Ben Devine, because I was like, how am I going to communicate to him what I'm looking for? Because I don't know music terminology. I don't know music theory, but he was just amazing. He was so amazing. Like he patiently listened to all my clunky directions and he made a masterpiece. I've consistently gotten compliments on the music, and that's all thanks to him. I can't give my vague directions really any more credit than calling them vague directions.
Right, yeah. That wonderfully brings us to the next question, which summarizes the whole thing. So like I said before, this is your first time collaborating with a composer, right?
Yep.
Could you walk us through your collaboration and how did you communicate like your spiritual themes without falling into like a cliche?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, the episode is rather light on dialogue. I don't have a ton of exposition heavy scenes. And so I knew there were at least two scenes that were going to be completely carried by music because there's no talking.
Right.
And that would be the opening scene. And then the scene where Kiva begins her search in the woods following the amulet. And that's towards the end of the episode. And there's so many emotions in that second scene, especially where, if you haven't seen the episode, I'm not sure how deep into analysis I can go, but suffice to say that she's been backed into a corner where she feels like she can't share the journey with anyone. She feels like she's alone and she looks to heaven. And then she seems to get this, urging from the craftsman, who's the divine figure of her world. And then that prompts her to follow the amulet into these dangerous woods. And she goes even deeper than before. And so the music I wanted for that scene was a blend of heroism, where she's selflessly setting off to do the right thing that no one else will do. But at the same point in time, I also wanted it to have an undertone of tragedy, because this is going to end badly for her. And and that's as much as I'm going to say, because watched the episode.
Yeah. That's great.
I don't want to spoil too much. Yeah. But that music needed to be just right. It needed to convey, you know, it needed to convey selflessness and heroism while at the same time having an undertone of tragedy. And I think that that's actually pretty close to the description I gave Ben. I found some really good stock music for it as well. And I said, you can kind of adhere to this, but, you know, give it your own flair. Yeah. And he absolutely did a phenomenal job on that scene, on the whole thing. But I think that was the scene we fine-tuned the most, and I was so happy with the final result.
Yeah. I will say that the music was perfectly placed in that film. I'm like, oh my god, this is great, you know. So when you're writing the story, you know, how, like, when did you start thinking about where the music goes and how the music should be? Did you think about it while you were writing, or immediately after you finished the whole story?
That's a great question, because it's really a combination of both. Okay. So for instance, when I wrote the opening scene, for example, there's just this action that happens. I knew in my mind writing that, okay, this scene has to have music, because otherwise we're just going to be listening to forest noises the whole time with, you know, animals chirping in the distance. And that's not going to be very suspense driving. This scene needs to have some kind of suspenseful undertone, and music will give us that. Right. So I knew the opening score was really important. I also knew that the montage I was just talking about of her beginning her search would have music, because it's, you know, it's a silent montage otherwise, and we need music to drive that forward. Yeah. The dialogue scenes with, originally I had thought maybe we would put some music underneath the two dialogue scenes where Kiva's talking to her brother Rian, but Ben and I actually came to a unanimous agreement that those scenes are better without music under them, because the acting was just so good. I was like, yeah, I don't want the slightest thing to distract me from their voices and their facial expressions. They're just inhabiting these characters so perfectly, and I just want this to feel like we're just listening to a conversation between siblings. And it was funny, because I had not put any temporary music under that scene when I did the rough cut, because when you do a rough cut, you put temp music in just to kind of get an idea for pacing.
Right.
And when I sent the cut to Ben and said, okay, now you can do your first draft of the score, he came back and said, yeah, I noticed you didn't have any music in this scene. I had started to write music for this scene, but then I watched it and I was like, no, I don't think we should have music.
I agree.
Yeah. Right. So that was awesome to see that. But the other thing, that's going to be spoilers. I was going to talk about the final scene with the music therein, but I can't talk about it without talking about spoilers. So watch the episode, and you'll appreciate the music in the final scene.
Yeah, because I don't want to just spoil anything, because everybody has to watch it to get their be right. You know it's awesome. So editing is very, very important in movies and episodes. Was there a time ever that, like what just happened to me, happened to you when you were editing, like, your biggest, like, scene or something, you know?
The closest I can say to that is we did, this was not a technological failure so much as it was just time getting away from us, but on the last day of the shoot, we had filmed the episode mostly in order, so going from the beginning, working our way to the climax, and we lost daylight on the first day of shooting.
Okay.
And I thought that because the Blackmagic cameras are so good in low light, I might be able to fake like a sunset look with some of the footage, even though the sun had completely gone down.
Right.
And I pushed DaVinci Resolve to its limits, and I was able to save some of the footage, but we ended up having to reshoot the climax, which I was really happy about. We released a behind the scenes videos about that. So there was that, and just one of the many situations where God took something that looked like a setback and turned it into an amazing blessing, because we changed some things when we reshot the climax, and just little details that I think really elevated the scene.
Nice. Yeah, well, stuff like that just randomly happened. So once again, I do apologize for that, you know, but that's good. Okay, so my next question for you, before we got rudely interrupted by my internet. So on this set of any, like, movie or episode, you know, there's always, like, stressful times. Making movies episodes can be very, very stressful, right? Did you come into it with already, like a playlist of, like, music that you can play for the actors or the crew behind the scenes, just to make them, like, feel like more, I guess, unstressful, you know, situation, you know?
I can't speak to what the actors or the crew chose to listen to, but okay, I can say that me personally, one of my favorite Christian artists is Jeremy Camp. And his new album, Deeper Waters, is phenomenal. And he had released it, I think it was May of last year. It was right before we were going to shoot. And we, on the drive to the set, I would listen to that album on repeat. And there's so many songs, because the album is really about yielding your life to God and taking your faith and making it stronger and just surrendering every aspect of your life to God and trusting him with the bigger picture of it when you can't see it. And that theme really resonated with me as I was preparing to direct these people for the first time and work with this crew for the first time. And my prayer was just that God would be glorified in it and that I would represent him well. And then, of course, the episode would be artistically excellent, because that also glorifies the Lord. He's glorified by artistic excellence. And the album Deeper Waters, just front to back, packed with so much encouragement, so many songs I could identify with. No Survivors. One of the final songs is Need to Be Near. And it's a song that basically says repeatedly, I don't need my heart to be unbroken. I don't need my hurt to heal fast. I don't need that door I want to open. And I don't need to understand my past. So many great things, but it just says, but the one thing I need is I need to be near you. Mm. And it's a great reminder that whether you're under a lot of stress or whether you're under a shower of blessings and everything seems to be going your way, don't let either one of those extremes pull you away from God, because he's the only thing you need.
Exactly. That's perfectly said. So this next question is for my listeners who might be create movies in the episode just like you did. You know, because I never know who is listening to our podcast. I just wanted to make it known that you know. So for a fellow do-it-yourself filmmaker that's listening, you know. So what tools and plugins were very much needed to make a big sound on a modest budget, you know, because when you're starting it out, you're like, what plugins do I need for, you know, to make this scene work? Is there any plugins that you absolutely needed?
I would say that the Adobe suite was a huge blessing because of Adobe After Effects. We did, there weren't very many VFX in the film, but we did do a castle visual effects shot where we had a castle miniature and then we composited some soldiers onto the wall. And then we of course did scale effects to make the castle look bigger. And that we did that in After Effects. So that was very helpful. I think some basic visual effects expertise, and actually beyond basic in that case, but some visual effects expertise is definitely helpful. I would also say that it's important to surround yourself with talented people who are really good at their jobs. And this is something I was told all through film school, and it's true, is that networking is key. Filmmaking is not like writing a book. This is probably the biggest difference. I can sit down and write a book all by myself.
Yeah.
I don't need a boom op. I don't need a camera op. I don't need a sound mixer to write a book. But you need those things to make a film.
You do.
In this case, a proof of concept TV episode. But filmmaking is very much a collaborative effort. And that's the other thing I love so much about directing as opposed to just writing a book, is that it really gives you a unique participation in the image of God that a lot of people don't necessarily get to experience. Because when you have a team of people who might not even know each other very well, all working together and bringing their creativity to the forefront, all with one singular vision in mind, it's really a tiny glimpse at, I think, the way that God sees all of human history as he works in the lives of his people to bring good for those who love him and for those who are called according to his purpose. And that's just, it forges a real spiritual bond. And just that adventure was really phenomenal, and I'm very, very grateful that we got to do that for this first episode.
Nice. Yeah, so the visual effect that I really love, and please help me out here with this. I think it's a key or like a stone that she takes out of the tree at first. I guess it's the lost healer.
It's the amulet that points to the healer. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So one of the three stars. Yeah.
Yeah. So my favorite effect, it's so simple, but it brings out the story even more. It's like when it was glowing to tell her which way to go.
That was
perfect, you know. And I guess that was a visual effect that you did in Adobe.
Yes. In some scenes, yes. So the scene you're referring to where it's changing, it's glowing to tell her to change directions. Yeah, that was done in After Effects.
Okay.
But actually, funnily enough, the amulet that we had was a practically made prop that actually could glow. It's just we found that when it was outside in the sunlight, you couldn't see the glow.
Right.
So I had to accentuate the glow in After Effects. Yeah. But inside, when she has it inside the castle, that brief moment where she tucks it into her bag when she's inside the dark castle, that's actually the native glow. The prop is glowing there. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, because I guess when the sun's out too bright, you're like, okay, well, the sun's glowing, so I got to bump it up more, you know?
Yeah. The other thing I'll say, going back to your question about aspiring filmmakers, is pre-visualization is key. So I didn't show up on the set and then figure out that, oh, it doesn't glow the way I want it. Now, what do? I had shot indoors and outdoor tests with the amulet ahead of time. And I figured out myself, okay, you can't see the glow outside. I know we're going to have to do this in post. Now I factor that into my schedule. It does work inside. Okay, then I can keep these shots inside and I won't have to worry about her like moving the amulet around too much for me to motion track it because I know it's going to be really glowing. It doesn't matter. But outside, you may notice that it fits the story too, because she's searching and she's moving slowly because she's not quite sure where she's going. But outside, she's not yanking it around really fast because I knew that I would have to motion track the amulet to keep the glow on it. So
that's so hard to do.
Exactly. Yeah, but if that was something that you hadn't discovered till after the fact, then you might not have thought of that. And then it would have been like, oh, I should have had her not move the amulet so fast because now I'm having a hard time motion tracking it. So it just helps to plan ahead and pre-visualize wherever you can.
Yeah. A lot of people take it for granted that, like, oh, you can just edit this in like 40 minutes. No, you got to go frame by frame by frame by frame. And it's like immeasurable, like a dragging on, you know, because especially when somebody's moving fast, you know, you really can't, you know, frame by frame by frame. That takes a long time, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. There are automatic tracking tools in After Effects that can speed it up, but even they have their limits. So it's always best to keep motion to a minimum wherever possible.
Right. So we're talking about movies and film and music too. So which film scores outside of your own, outside of The Lost Healer, permanently stayed on your playlist, and what have you borrowed or kind of avoided from them, you know?
Well, for the Lost Healer, and Ben, our composer, could speak to this more than I could. I don't know that we consciously necessarily borrowed from any film score, but I can tell you I have a host of film scores that definitely rise to my mind when I think of my favorite films.
Yeah.
So the most obvious examples might sound cliche, but I think it deserves to be mentioned, is Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I do not think Star Wars would be the cultural phenomenon that it is without John Williams' iconic score.
Right.
It is like you hear it and you instantly get chills. You instantly imagine the twin sun setting on Tatooine or some other key visual of the film. And it's because the music so perfectly captures the essence of the story. And it elevates the story so much. To like if Star Wars didn't have music and if it didn't have lightsabers, it would just be, you know, another sci-fi franchise that's long forgotten. Exactly. Yeah. But the music and the lightsabers make it what it is. And I'm referring not just to the visuals of the lightsabers, but the sound effects. So that's really the unsung heroes, no pun intended, the music of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then other scores, I love just about anything by Hans Zimmer. I love so many of the films he's done. I love scores that can really convey a variety of emotions. And the best scores are scores, depending on the genre of the film. Like Star Wars, you need a loud score that calls attention to itself. But in some films, I like scores that are actually really subtle. So subtle that you might not even realize consciously that they're there. They just blend so seamlessly with the dialogue or the action, that whatever's happening. And you're like, oh, there is a score. Like you might listen to the score separately. And when it's just the music playing, it's like, I didn't even notice that in the movie. It's because in the movie you were swept up in the drama of the dialogue or the action or something like that. And the score just blended so perfectly with it that it accentuated it without even calling attention to itself. And to me, that's kind of like what good editing in filmmaking is as well. You shouldn't be consciously thinking, oh, they cut there. Why'd they cut there? Oh, they did a close-up there. Why did they do a close-up there? Like, good editing doesn't call attention to itself. Good editing moves so seamlessly with the story that it really is invisible. And I think a lot of my favorite scores are that way too.
Nice. So, but I do know that a lot of independent musicians listen to this podcast. So, for you, What advice would you give my independent musicians who listen to the show? I'm hoping to break in scoring for faith-based or other genre films. Like, do you have any advice for them?
Sure. I mean, not being a musician, the practical thing obviously is to continually hone your craft. Try to find your own distinct voice in music as much as filmmaking. I think that advice applies. Yeah. And to specifically any Christian listeners, I will say that if you're looking to glorify God through your craft, it's very, very important to keep your craft as an offering of worship and don't let it become an idol, because it's very easy. I've been tempted so many times to make filmmaking or storytelling or creativity into an idol. And by that, I mean, you draw all your well-being from it and you rest your emotional stability on it. Your emotional stability, your sense of identity, that needs to be grounded in God, because he's unchanging. Creative opportunities, they rise and fall. You might be super inspired to write music one day, and the next day, I can't even write the first line of a song. Or in my case, the first line of a script. But you know, same principle.
Yeah.
Same principle. You prayerfully commit your art to the Lord, and you keep him as the center of your life, the center of your identity. And then the art has its proper place as an object of worship. And so that's what's truly honoring to him. And then the other thing I will say, I'm sure this applies to musicians as well, is networking. I personally loathe social media, but it's a necessary evil in this world if you want to network and get connections. So lots of people, independent musicians that I know, have like YouTube channels and various social media presence of getting their music heard. And that's probably, you know, how you're going to make connections and get job opportunities for scoring independent films.
Right. Yeah. I just have two more questions for you and then we'll let you go. But I do want to thank you for coming on the show today with us. So we're going to fast forward 5 years from now, okay? I know that's a long time, you know. But what does success look like to you? Did you want this to be like a more like a cinematic universe? Or streaming series, or like even like a live orchestral concert of the score from the episodes.
That's thinking big. I would be so blessed and so humbled.
Yeah.
If there were live orchestras of the score for this, that would be phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the Lord has in store. Honestly, back when we were pre-producing this episode, and I was working doing the business end of it largely by myself because most of the team hadn't come aboard yet. And I was thinking the business end is so not creatively fulfilling. Let's put it that way.
Right,
I was just like, this is just going to end up as a pile of notes on my computer, never going to go anywhere. And then little did I know, a year later, it would be on its festival circuit, winning best TV series. And just it's incredible what God has done with it. It's absolutely incredible. But so for the next 5 years, who knows what more he'll do with it. Prayerfully, it will become a multi-season series. That's the vision. That's how it's being written.
Yeah.
It could have spinoffs. It could possibly have a feature film. That's thinking ambitiously further down the road, I think. But and like I mentioned, I've written fantasy novels in my teen years that are meant to take place in the same world. So maybe those could get developed into something down the line and have some sort of tie-in. At the moment, though, I'm just really invested in the stories of our main characters, Princess Kiva, Prince Rian, and Aaron. They are the narrative backbone of the story engine. Their struggles, their adventures is really the backbone of the show, and I'm really excited to keep fleshing that out as God grants.
Nice. Yeah, those are some amazing characters, you know, and you bring them to life like wonderfully, you know. I'm totally invested in this for sure. And that's
I think most of the credit also belongs to the actors, because I wrote the script for this episode almost 3 years ago. And so I've had them just as words on a page.
Right.
And then to see the actors actually breathing life into them was just phenomenal. It was like it was like seeing, you know, your own characters just spring to life in front of you, and it's like it was in my head and now it's in real life. And
it's like, oh my
God. It was a humbling experience. It was absolutely fantastic.
Finally, the last question is, okay, so this is outside the box question, right? Can you share a piece of music that currently represents where you are in your journey right now? It can be like any kind of, it doesn't have to be from the lost, you know, Lost sure. Lyrics can be like any, like what song represents where you are right now. Yeah.
So I would say, I've already mentioned Jeremy Camp's album, Deeper Waters. My favorite song off the album is No Survivors, not just because it's super rock based, which is my preferred genre, but also because the lyrics are all about fully surrendering your life to God and having him put your old man to death so that the new man can fully come to life.
Right.
And I feel like that's every Christian's ambition, is to be wholly surrendered to God and be completely and in the service of his plan. Yeah. If I had to share another piece of music by another artist that I think has been really meaningful to me, it would be a newer artist named Natalie Lane. She's fantastic. And she has a song called Be Human that I absolutely love. I mean, I love pretty much any song she does, but that's my favorite one. And because it kind of has two layers of meaning. It's a song about, you know, sharing human struggles. And so it's kind of sung from the point of view of a friend encouraging someone else. But then there's like a secondary layer of meaning, I think, where we could also imagine Jesus saying these words to us, because Jesus, as God, takes on flesh, walks our struggles, but still lives a sinless life. Then he dies in our place. And to this day, he's ascended in heaven, interceding for us, and we have the comfort that he knows what it's like to be human.
Yeah.
So he's a high priest who can sympathize with our weaknesses, as the book of Hebrews tells us. And I love the song Be Human because it reminds me of that.
Nice, nice. Well, we honestly love you here at Wooden Word Show, and we can't wait to have you back. You know, maybe we can put that orchestral score together for you, hopefully one day soon, you know.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So, but let's give you some shout-outs right now. You can go to WilsonHickmanFilm.com and see everything that he's... Or is that the right address?
You can go there. It's better to go to thelosthealer.com, though, if you want to learn about The Lost Healer, yeah.
Okay, thelosthealer.com. And you're on LinkedIn, so people can reach out to you if they want to work with you, you know, in the future, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And I did see you're on Instagram too, correct?
Instagram and Facebook as well. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm personally on Instagram and Facebook, and then you can also follow The Lost Healer there. It's at The Lost Healer Series.
Right. And are we on TikTok?
No.
Oh, I can't.
Not if I can help it.
TikTok weird, dude. It's like, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out, you know. It's kind of newish to me, you know, but I'm working at it, you know. So, you know, like I said before, we do love you here and beg you to come back. But yeah, so thank you very much.
Thank you, James. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you. All right. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening to the episode, and always remember, Word Fail, Music Speaks. Bye, guys.